The new book Final Flight tells a mysterious story from World War II that happened in the Sierra Nevada. It's about the disappearance of four airmen during a routine training mission. One of the missing bodies was found in 2005. Final Flight author Peter Steckel found a second body in 2007. He was exploring the area of the plane crash while doing research for his book. He's going to be in Sacramento and Davis this weekend. He joins us right now by phone. Peter Steckel, welcome to Insight.
Thank you for the invitation.
Before these bodies were found in 2005 and 2007, what did people know about this mysterious disappearance?
Not a whole lot. The plane had disappeared on the training flight in 1942. Four UC Berkeley students found wreckage scattered across the Mendel Glacier in northern Kings Canyon in 1947. The military made took an opportunity in the fall of that year to go up there to see if they could recover remains and were unsuccessful. They made two other trips in 1948 and were also unsuccessful. And then the whole story pretty much disappeared until 2005 when the remains of Leo Mustonen were found.
When did the four airmen disappear?
It was November 18th, 1942.
And why were they flying over the Sierra? What was their mission?
Well, it was World War II was happening. The United States was very actively involved in training soldiers and aviators to fight in Europe and in the South Pacific. And these people were on a navigation training mission. There were three students and one pilot. They were training to be navigators on the big bombers of that era, which was the B-17.
So this was presumably considered a routine mission.
Yes, most definitely routine. But I should point out that during World War II, fully 25% of the casualties suffered by our service personnel were domestic during training accidents and other causes. And we had over 7,000 airplanes that were lost in training accidents in the United States, whereas the Japanese were only successful in shooting down approximately 5,000 of our aircraft in the South Pacific. And some people have likened these statistics to there being actually a third front during World War II.
My goodness, I wasn't aware of that number of crashes in the United States. My guest is Peter Steckel, author of Final Flight, The Mystery of a World War II Plane Crash and the Frozen Airmen of the High Sierra. Was there anything unusual about the weather or anything like that when these men went on their mission over the Sierra?
Well, during my initial investigation, I was able to get a copy of the 1942 and 1947 reports that the Army Air Forces compiled from their investigations. And the 1942 report said that the weather was fine. There had been some storm activity in previous days, but on the morning of November 18th, the weather was clear, with a high scattered clouds to the south. Then in the 1947 report, it repeated that, but there was also a note attached saying that there was bad weather that day, which confused me. I did some research into the weather conditions of those days and found that in the afternoon of the 18th that there was quite a large storm that hit the Sierra Nevada, dumping feet of snow. It was over an inch of rain in Sacramento. It even rained in Winnemucca, 1.5 inches of rain on the 18th in Winnemucca, Nevada. That probably was all the rain they got that year.
Sure. Well, setting aside the weather conditions on that day, how could this plane crash and these bodies just go missing for decades? I mean, yes, it's a wilderness area, but couldn't aircraft flying overhead, hikers in the area, have found these remains, this crash site earlier?
Well, the area in and of itself is quite remote. And then also, as a place for people for recreation, the national park of visitation during the war years was less than 10% what it was before the war. And when I say less than 10%, that's the total visitation during the whole World War II era had 10% total less recreation than any year before that. So remote, not very many people getting up there. Spotting any wreckage from an airplane would be pretty difficult. I've flown over the crash site several times at 15,000 feet, and I know where to look, and I still can't see anything. So it would be very difficult to be able to spot anything from the air, and very difficult for anyone to have found anything because people weren't going there.
When these two mountaineers in 2005 found one of the bodies, were they looking for this or did they just stumble upon it?
They pretty much stumbled upon him. They were up there to do a climb, and the weather conditions that day, it was cold and windy and blustery, and they were pretty much trudging up the glacier with their parka hoods up, and it was pure serendipity that they passed by the remains of this one person that were melting out of the glacier.
What did they do when they found these remains?
At first, they didn't believe what they were seeing, and they talked about it for a while, even though they could see a parachute and they could see a part of the aviator's body. They still were pretty amazed at what they saw, and when they finally decided that, yes, indeed, this is a person, they instantly changed their plans. They aborted their climb. They hiked out to the town of Bishop and reported their find to the local authorities, who then contacted the National Park Service because it was in Kings Canyon National Park. And then the National Park Service contacted JPAC, which is the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command. It's a division of our armed forces that their duty is to find and repatriate the remains of our service personnel from past conflicts.
You've mentioned Mendel Glacier, where the climbers found these remains. For people who are not quite clear on where that is, it's in the Southern Sierra, correct?
That's correct. It's in the Southern Sierra, but it's in the northern part of Kings Canyon National Park.
Yes. My guest is Peter Stackle, author of Final Flight, The Mystery of a World War II Plane Crash and the Frozen Airmen of the High Sierra. A couple of years later, you found another body from the wreckage. How did you come to be there? Were you looking for this?
Well, I had gone up there to look for airplane wreckage. When Leo Mustonen was found in 2005, it was in October. The Park Service recovered his remains. It had snowed, and they were focused just on bringing Leo home and not looking for anything else. There had been newspaper reports and television reports that because no wreckage had been found, that these remains were from something else. So I wanted to go up there and find wreckage from the missing airplane to confirm that he had indeed been on that aircraft. In a million years, I never would have thought that I would have found the remains of Glenn Munn. That was the furthest thing from my thoughts.
And what was it like for you when you found the remains of this man who had died there decades earlier?
Well, it was and continues to be a very emotional thing for me. But I was also incredibly happy because I knew that there would be another family that would finally have the closure that had escaped them for over 60 years. And having the opportunity to provide that closure for Glenn Munn's family was one of the more significant things I've ever experienced.
Yes, I can understand, and we can certainly understand why it was an emotional experience for you and presumably for the family when you found the remains of Glenn Munn up in the Sierra Nevada. How can remains become mummified for so long in a place where they were not intended to be mummified?
Well, in following the crash, the remains were buried in a, they were on top of a glacier. They were buried in several feet of snow from that winter, and after being encased in the ice, it's almost like being freeze-dried.
I see. You also found wreckage. What did you do when you saw wreckage? Because I guess on the one hand, you're there to try and find it for yourself, for your book, ultimately, what happened. But I guess military officials were probably interested in checking out the wreckage, too, to see if they could figure out what happened.
Actually, that didn't occur. By the time I was up there, we were as certain as we could be that the wreckage that would be found would have to be associated with the airplane that disappeared in 1942. It was more a question of confirming that the wreckage was there. When the college students had first found the wreckage in 1947, the military team that went up to recover remains had found the two engines from the Beech 18, and on the engine was a tag which identified it as the missing aircraft. So my mission in going up there in 2007 was just to confirm that the remains found in 2005 were associated with that wreckage.
How did the families of the crewmen who died react to all of this, these discoveries and this investigation? Because on the one hand, I can certainly understand why people would want closure and know what happened to their family member and lay them to rest in a more usual fashion. On the other hand, some people say, well, you know, that's their resting site and just leave it alone, perhaps.
Well, the family was very excited. Glenn Munn had three younger sisters. They all had several children, and there were several grandchildren. And the children and grandchildren had known about an Uncle Glenn, but they didn't really know a whole lot about him. And so when I contacted them, they were all really happy. They were really excited. They insisted that I come to Glenn's funeral in the town of Coleraine in eastern Ohio, and they welcomed me as a family member, which was very endearing and special to me. They were incredibly kind and generous and opening their home and their memories to me. It was neat.
I can certainly imagine. At the end of all this, do you feel like you know for sure what happened to that airplane and those airmen?
I don't think we'll ever know for sure, because there's still so much of what happened that day that we'll never know. But I feel from my research in talking to geologists and meteorologists and climatologists and people who trained during World War II to be navigators and pilots, I feel I have a good idea of what may have happened. There's a couple possible scenarios that I came up with, but I don't think I'll ever know for sure the exact cause of the crash.
Were there any radio transmissions right before they disappeared?
Well, you know, that's actually a very interesting question. Most people don't focus on that part, but there were no radio transmissions, and the airplane they were flying in did have a radio. There were plenty of military training bases in the Central Valley and in the Owens Valley at that time. So why didn't they radio their position? If they were in trouble, why didn't they radio they were in trouble? And also, if they were in trouble, why did they try to cross the Sierra Nevada when they had the option of going to any of these other Army Air Forces bases? That's a question that continues to dig at me, and I don't know the answer.
And perhaps we never will know, for sure.
I think you're right.
Finally, Peter, you were born in Southern California. You live in Seattle, but you know this area well, in part because you've hiked in the Sierra Nevada since you were a boy. But you also studied at UC Davis, where you got a BA in botany.
That's right.
So were you going to be a botanist?
Yes, my introduction to the Sierra Nevada was actually at a Boy Scout camp in Sequoia National Park, and the people I worked with were all very interested in botany. I had a mentor there at the camp who is a graduate student at UC Davis, and I had always been interested in plants, and that was the career I wanted to pursue, and it all goes back to my initial exposure to the Sierra Nevada and wanting to know about the trees and the wildflowers and the ecology of the area. Why are plants like the giant sequoia only found in the Sierra Nevada? So that was my initial goal in life.
I see. Peter Steckel's new book is Final Flight, The Mystery of a World War II Plane Crash and the Frozen Airmen of the High Sierra. He's in Davis and Sacramento this weekend on Saturday evening at 7:30. He's at the Avid Reader in Davis, and on Sunday afternoon at 4, he's at the Avid Reader in Sacramento. Peter Steckel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. I appreciate your interest.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. When we come back, Sacramento is a French film festival, a Jewish film festival, and a gay and lesbian film festival.